Cradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.
Hello, it's Jason Rushton, and you're listening to Cradio. In 2009, Abby Johnson decided to quit her job at Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion provider in America. She had a change of heart about her work after she assisted in an ultrasound-guided abortion of a 13-week-old baby. The world might never have heard about her heroic decision to leave. In fact, it was Planned Parenthood who first reported it to the media. Abby would have preferred a less public life, but when Planned Parenthood brought a legal challenge against her in order to silence her, she started to become more outspoken. Over the last 2 years, she has travelled all over America telling her story, speaking out for life and against the lies of the abortion industry. In January of this year, she released her best-selling book, Unplanned, the dramatic true story of a former Planned Parenthood leader's eye-opening journey across the lifeline. Right now, she's gracing the shores of Australia and has already visited Brisbane, Toowoomba, Hobart, Melbourne and Albury. And having arrived in Sydney, she joins us now on the line at Cradio. Abby, it's a real honour to speak to you and thanks so much for giving up your time.
Oh, of course. It's great to be here. Thanks.
Well, there's so much I'd love to ask you, if only we had more time. But maybe first of all, I see you've been sidewalk counselling in Melbourne, you've spoken in Queensland Parliament, and you've attended the Australian Right to Life Conference. What stood out for you most from your time in Australia so far?
Well, I think that, you know, a couple things. I think that there is... I think that there's a large youth movement here in Australia that, you know, there's just a large number of youth that are wanting to get active in the pro-life cause. And, you know, they're just kind of, they're wanting to do something, but they're not sure what to do. They're not sure how to get started. And it's exciting because there are lots of different opportunities. There's lots of different ways that they can get involved. And, you know, I believe that abortion will end. I believe that, you know, the way that we save lives and the way that we do it most effectively is through grassroots, through the grassroots movement and just kind of feet on the ground and you know, using our mouths and just, you know, firsthand stories. I believe that's how we do the most good in this movement. And so, you know, there's a lot of people, particularly young people, that are just really, you know, they're really excited about doing something to end abortion and to save these children's lives. And so that's really exciting. And I just, you know, I see that there's a lot that needs to be done here. And, you know, you guys have a big fight in front of you, and you know that's okay. You know, there's a lot to accomplish. There's a lot that you guys need to accomplish. You know, but it can be done. And I look at, you know, all of the things that have been done in the U.S. Where I'm from, and I just know that, you know, if you have the right people in place and you have the right momentum going, that it all can be accomplished.
Well, I'm sure lots of those young people would be listening now. And so maybe is there any specific advice or any, especially from your experience in America, that you would share, especially with young people, about what they can do to better fight the pro-life cause?
Yeah. You know, we've got, you know, one thing, if they want to go to Australia Right to Life, their website, they have a lot of different ways that people can get involved. They actually, Australia Right to Life has a helpline that it's a hotline that is open 24 hours, and there's different ways people can get involved in that. It's for women who find themselves in crisis pregnancies, so that, you know, they have somebody to talk to any time of the day. And there's also, you know, legislative efforts that people can get involved with. And there's ministry, you know, kind of this outreach, getting in front of the clinics, praying in front of the clinics, you know, doing the sidewalk counseling, doing the outreach to the women who have appointments scheduled to abort their children, you know, that day. And being somebody that can potentially save the life of a child. I mean, there's nothing better than that. There's nothing more rewarding than that. And you know, we and 40s Australia Right to Life, they partner with 40s for Life, which is an international prayer movement, and they can people can find more out about that at 40aidsforlife.com. And 40s for Life is all throughout Australia, and applications actually just opened up right now for 40s for Life. So there's a lot of things going on here in Australia. There's a lot of things that people can get involved in, a lot of different activities people can get involved in, and people are, babies are being saved all throughout this nation, and so it's a really exciting time.
One question I really wanted to ask you was, what was it like to be on the other side of the fence, so to speak, and inside an abortion clinic and turning up to work each day and seeing the same faces across the road holding rosary beads and praying? What was your reaction at first to them? Did you just think they were wasting their time, or how much did it have an impact on you?
You know, it's interesting because being on the other side and seeing people who are, you know, there and praying, it's interesting to walk into that every day because, you know, people go, you know, you go to the dentist's office, you go to the chiropractor's office, and, you know, you walk in there and you don't see anybody out there, you know, telling you not to go in, right? Because it's normal to go to those types of clinics. It's normal to go to a dentist or a chiropractor, and you don't have anybody telling you that it's not okay. But to go into an abortion clinic, to go into a place like that, that's taking the lives of children, it's morally objectionable. And so to have people out there that are constantly reminding you of that, you know, it is bothersome, and it's stirring the conscience of people that are walking in, and even the workers. You know, is it bothersome? You know, does it get on your nerves? You know, especially, you know, for somebody like me that was there all the time, you know, absolutely. You know, it did. But it also reminds you that the work that you're doing is not normal. And you know, that there are a huge group of people that find what you do offensive and find what you do morally wrong. In, you know, in the very worst type of way. And so, you know, that does begin to bother you in a way. And I think that that's why we see so many clinic workers, you know, leaving their job and leaving their employment. Because it is very difficult to go to a place, you know, and not just do what they do every day. I mean, that's hard too. To see the things that they see and everything like that, but also just to go to a place and to see people out there and see them praying, and you know, many of these people are people that go to church or they were raised in church, and to say, you know, my gosh, this is my life now, you know, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, and it is very bothersome.
And I've read that you said that it was the people who were there praying day after day with compassion and love who ended up having the most impact on you, whereas the ones who were there with anger or who were rude, they were the ones that kind of turned you off.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were the ones, actually, the people that were there who were compassionate, who, you know, that didn't have the big graphic signs, who, you know, didn't come out there with their huge, you know, crucifix, that didn't come, you know, that just came out there with their rosaries, that just came out there, you know, with their, you know, that were just very peaceful and, you know, just came out there to pray and with their pamphlets and just to offer information, you know, quietly into sidewalk council. They were the ones that not only had an impact on me, but they were the ones that also were doing the most good in changing the minds of the women who were going in to have an abortion. And that's what makes the biggest, that's what we really want to see. You know, what's making the difference to the women who are going in to have an abortion. That's what we want to look at. And, you know, when people were out there and when, you know, when they were out there and screaming with their signs and, you know, doing all this stuff that people will look at and go, oh, you know, look at those, you know, religious crazy people out there. You know, that is something that people are going to look at and it's going to turn them off. And they're going to run into that building and they're going to think, you know, these are people that I cannot relate to. But when all of that stuff went away and when it just became a peaceful, normal-looking presence outside of the clinics, people actually started going up to them and people were talking to them and they were turning around. And that's when we started to see, you know, women changing their mind and they were actually choosing life for their children.
And Abby, I mean, your story is just so amazing. And everyone who's read your book has said it's just had a really big impact on them. And it must have just been such a roller coaster ride over the last 2 years. But one thing to top it all off that's, I guess, shocked a lot of people is your decision to become Catholic. Do you mind just quickly telling us how this came about?
Yeah. Well, my husband and I had been going to an Episcopal church, which is like the U.S. version of Anglican. And we had been going there, and the Episcopal church, unlike the Anglican church, is very, they're very progressive. They are pro-abortion. They are pro-homosexual rights. They are, they're very, very progressive. And so, we had gone there and I really wanted to join the church because, you know, they were very pro-abortion and many of the people that went there, were supporters of Planned Parenthood. But when we went, I just immediately fell in love with the liturgy. The liturgy is actually almost identical to the Roman Catholic liturgy. And I grew up in a Baptist church, and so I'd never been exposed to that. You know, I kind of went to a praise and worship service. And so I didn't know anything about that, and so I just immediately fell in love with it. And, you know, I was kind of raised to believe that, you know, all of that is traditional and ritualistic, you know, and all that kind of stuff, but I just loved it. And then whenever I made the decision to leave Planned Parenthood and become pro-life, we were actually asked to leave the church because, you know, they were pro-choice, and because we were pro-life, we wouldn't be welcome there.
Amazing.
And so we didn't know where we were going to go, and we went and looked at many different churches. And my husband and I knew we felt very, we were very sure that we wanted to remain in a church that practiced liturgy. And so we were, you know, looking around, going to different churches and everything. And then a lot of our new friends, a lot of my new friends, were Catholic, of course. They were pro-life, and they were Catholic. And so, you know, some of our friends were like, oh, you should try out the Catholic Church. You should go to a Mass. And so I thought, okay, you know, and we went to a Mass. And I think from just the very first time we went, I think it felt like it was just the right thing. I think it felt like home for us. And for me, my mom kind of jokes and says that I was probably born a Catholic because even as a small child, I used to watch EWTN and I was a Baptist kid, and like I was 4 or 5 and I used to watch EWTN and I used to watch Mother Angelica on EWTN, and I used to put like a towel over my head and pretend I was a nun. And I loved everything about Catholicism. And I was obsessed with Mary. I always had questions about her and you know, I was always asking why we didn't talk about Mary in the Baptist Church, and, you know, why we didn't study her, and, you know, why we didn't, you know, go, why we didn't talk more about her, and why she wasn't important, you know, to us. And, you know, and I got the typical, you know, Baptist answer of, you know, be quiet. But, you know, I think there was just something, you know, there was some kind of connection there that I was always missing. And I wasn't able to ever really explore, you know. And when we, and I think there were, you know, two parts of my faith that were always missing, and one was the liturgy. And then, you know, I found that in the Episcopalian Church. And then the second part was the Marian tradition. And I didn't get that. I didn't find that until, you know, we were in the Catholic Church. And so now, you know, we feel like really our worship is very complete and our faith is very complete. And so it was just right. And I mean, we just knew it from that first Mass.
Wow. Well, it certainly shows in your life. I mean, just a really amazing story, and you're an amazing woman, and it's a real honor to speak to you. So if people want to meet you in person, they can tonight, in fact, at Notre Dame University, and you'll be in Sydney for the whole weekend, tomorrow at the Epping Club, and Sunday at Theology on Tap, and we'll have full details of that on our website. Abby, thank you so much for giving up your time to speak to us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Credio, Nourishing the Soul of the Digital Generation. For more music, talks, interviews, and other devotions, visit our website, credio.org.au. God bless.